So this paper is co-authored with my good friend here, Sebastián Briceño, and he's the real expert on relations. I've heard a few people already at this conference get their excuses in, saying, I'm not really an expert on relations, I've just got a bit of an interest in it. So I think it's great that we've got a conference devoted just to this subject, and I'm sure we're all learning things. So the project is power structuralism, and this talk, I think, as well as the focus on relations, I hope you think it fits nicely into your project. If I were writing a revisionary history of philosophy, what I would say was power structuralism was born at the University of Leeds in the early to mid-90s. The reason I say that is I was doing a PhD there with James Ladiman, and he was working on the structuralism and I was working on the powers, and power structuralism is kind of the love child that came out of that time. But I don't believe that's the correct history of philosophy at all. No, I'm sure the ideas in power structuralism have been around a long, long time. Just one other thing to contextualise what I'm going to say. So I'm going to be saying quite a few things that seem critical of structuralism and structural realism and ontic structural realism. But I would hope that people realise that I'm doing this in a friendly way. And so in my Laws in Nature book, for instance, I got a very kind of structuralist picture there, but it's more a question of getting the right nuances to get the right kind of structuralism. I'm disappointed that James Ladiman isn't able to be here today. He told me the reasons why, but in large part this talk is a discussion of some of James's ideas and a very critical discussion. So James and I have been friends for a long time, and we haven't really had any harsh words between us, but I was seeing today as an opportunity to get it all out in the open and say what we've both been thinking for the last 10 years or so. So I'm sorry he's not going to be here to answer some of the criticisms that we're going to raise.
Even
back at he'll be here tomorrow, so maybe we get a chance to discuss it. But what is the talk about? Okay, so I like structures, I like this kind of relational structure, I like that picture of the world, but could the world be nothing but structure? Now, I think Jonathan Schaffer's talk yesterday discussed this briefly, and I'm pretty worried that he'd stolen a lot of our thunder, but I think we've got some other things to add to that and some more detailed argument than he was able to give. So I'm going to start from what I would take to be a standard view, and it's a standard view that I think has got lots of problems, but there's something to it, there's an appeal to the standard view, and this is the idea that relations are going to hold in virtue of something about the relata. Now, I think you'd have to say more than that, certainly for the case of external relations. Maybe you're going to have to say, well, it's not just the relata, but maybe the whole of which the relata are a part, to get spatial relations as well. But the idea would simply be that you certainly do need the relata, and they kind of provide the relation. So to take a very simple example, if X is taller than Y, you kind of think, yeah, if for that to be true, there's got to be something really there in the world. But suppose we took away the X and the Y, and we're just left with is taller than. Is that anything? Is that an existent? Is that real? Of course, there'll be other things maybe instantiating the relation, but suppose we took away all the things that could stand in that relation. Is there anything really left? Now, take it that our initial reaction would be, well, no, it doesn't seem like there is anything real left if you take away the relata. But ontic structural realism effectively is telling us that, yes, we could have a world consisting in nothing but relations without any relata that kind of instantiate or concretize those relations. Now, by ontic structural realism, I'm getting at that strong claim. I'd say it's a metaphysical claim. And I'd want to distinguish it, as some people have already done. I think James himself distinguished. There's a more modest form of ontic structural realism. Michael Esfelt argued this at one point, which it doesn't deny that there are particulars, but it's saying that they've got a kind of structural essence, or the structural relations provide the individuation for the particulars. And I quite like that view. I also want to distinguish it from epistemic structural realism, which is just a claim about our knowledge that structure is ultimately what we know about the world. The ontic structural realism I'm going for is the strong form, a strong ontological claim. I was listening very carefully yesterday when James mentioned this view, and he said it was a view that people had attributed to him at some point in the past or something. He had some qualifications suggesting maybe he was backing away from it, I'm not sure. But that's the view. Okay, and what we're going to argue in this talk is whatever the problems are with the standard view of relations and relata, okay, so whatever the concerns about the standard view, we're going to say ontic structural realism isn't the solution. In fact, we end up with a far worse position than even if we just accept the standard view. Okay, let's start very briefly just summarising what would motivate ontic structural realism. Just so you don't think it's the product of madness. There are some reasons why people go for this. But then I'm going to go through some of the objections. So some of these objections have been put before. But that means that Ladyman and Ross have had an opportunity to respond to some of these objections and look at some of their responses and argue that it's not adequate at all. So why might you go for such a strong view as ontic structural realism, denying that there are particulars? Everything must go. Well, the ontic structural realist points out how elusive these particulars are, both epistemically. So our knowledge of the world is based on some kind of causal interaction with it, where we're able to experience the impression that the world makes on our senses, and we're able to see how particulars in the world relate to each other. But it seems the particular itself is something that seems elusive. So when you try to motivate a bundle theory of substance, if you're teaching an introductory metaphysics course, you might make a point like, well, all we can know is the qualities of something, and we can't strip it away and find any kind of underlying substratum, a point that Locke made in the essay. So the particulars seem epistemically elusive, but they're also ontologically elusive insofar as we would have to come up with a theory of substance, which, okay, some people think they've got a theory of substance, but it's not an easy task. Okay, so there's work to do there to justifying having something in your ontology that's not an immediate part of our experience. So there's that kind of motivation, the elusiveness of things in themselves and their intrinsic natures. Now, I'm I am sympathetic to this motivation, so that it was a motivation I used in my Laws in Nature book when I was talking about the natures of dispositional properties. It seems that there we can only know the natures of the qualities in terms of what they're able to do. So that's a relation that they bear to some other thing. So if anyone doesn't know, I do a lot of work on metaphysics of powers, and to understand what a power is, you have to understand what it's a power for, what it's able to do. So that's immediately a kind of a relational account. Or is it? Well, that's up for debate. But I'm straight away having to appeal to other things. So I'm sympathetic to that motivation. Second motivation, the sort of discussion we had yesterday that Jonathan and James touched upon, the quantum entanglement cases, which shows that the nature of things, not obviously discrete in a way that we might feel if we've just got a classical picture of the world. And I know that this is a big motivation for James, and he's often criticising some of us metaphysicians if we're producing a metaphysics that's just suited for the classical world, where electrons are pictured as just very small billiard balls, completely discrete and independent. Whereas the quantum entanglement case shows that that discrete picture has got some challenges to face. So his argument in the book Everything Must Go is that if you're going to do metaphysics, it's got to be sufficiently naturalistic, which means you've got to take account of current thinking in science. And here's a third motivation for ontic structural realism. So it reconciles two arguments. One, an argument for scientific realism, which is Putnam's no miracles argument. The success of science can't just be a miracle. But he reconciles that with an argument against scientific realism, the pessimistic meta-induction. So many of our theories in the past have turned out to be false, so we've got to assume that our current theories are false as well. That's the pessimistic meta-induction. We don't really like that, but how are we going to reconcile it? Well, ontic structural realism thinks it's coming to the rescue. It's reconciling some form of realism that can explain the success of science, but explaining the falsity of past theories, and the basic position that we go for is this idea that it's the structure of the theory gets preserved in the theory change. So theory change is basically just about ditching the old inventory, ditching the old ontology, but there's a structure that gets preserved through the theory change. And also with my time at University of Leeds, is that just turning off now? I don't use PowerPoint because of technical problems. So technical problems even intruding when I don't use PowerPoint. So I remember being at University of Leeds was also Stephen French was there when James and I were students, and I've seen him motivate ontic structural realism in this way back in the mid 90s. He's saying that this is what it's really about, that the structure gets preserved through the theories. And of course, if ontic structural realism is true, if that is the case, then that's perfectly right insofar as the structural truths are going to be the only truths anyway. So it's the only part of a theory that even could be true. The rest is just going to be accompanying baggage. Okay, so, well, you know, if I was a real friend of ontic structural realism, maybe I could extol its virtues for even longer, but that's not my main point today. I just want to, and again, with the caveat that I'm very sympathetic to structuralism and forms of structural realism, but I'm going to say this picture, the ontic structural realist picture, saying the world is nothing but structure, and say we've got to reject that. I'm going to point out three major problems, but I'm going to spend some time on each of them and add a number of sub-points. So the first major problem, which Jonathan spent some time on yesterday afternoon, simply how can a relation exist without its relator? So that was just our initial intuition, I think. That's what motivates the standard view. Now, of course, this had been asked of structural realism long before James Ladyman and Don Ross wrote their book, so they had an opportunity to respond to the criticism. And here's what they came up with. The claim that relata are constructed as abstractions from relations doesn't imply that there are no relata, rather the opposite. A core aspect of the claim that relations are logically prior to relata is that relata of a given relation always turn out to be relational structures themselves on further analysis. Certainly, the structuralist faces a challenge in articulating her views to contemporary philosophers schooled in modern logic and set theory, which retains the classical framework of individual objects represented by variables subject to predication or membership, respectively. In lieu of a more appropriate framework for structuralist metaphysics, one has to resort to treating the logical variables and constants as mere placeholders, which are used for the definition and description of the relevant relations, even though it is the latter that bear all the ontological weight. We may not be able to think about structure without hypostatizing individuals as the bearers of structure, but it does not follow that the latter are ontologically fundamental. Okay, so they're getting in a few points there, kind of saying that you're clinging to these individuals partly just as a hangover of the logic that you're working with. And the language, we've got a language that's where individuals feature quite prominently. But if we go to the first part of that quotation, we can see this is a bold statement that the individuals within the ontic structural realist position, we could consider them the nodes within the structure, but if we look at those nodes and analyze them further, we're going to find that they're just a bunch of structures as well. So that we really do have relations all the way down. Okay, so we've got five reasons why we think this is inadequate. At the risk of overdoing it, five reasons. The first reason is simply that the problem really isn't addressed. If you think that you cannot have relations without relata, just being told, well, there are relata, they say rather the opposite. Of course there are relata, but these relata are just further relations. Well, you can see the worry that you have, the unease with having relata-less relations, that's not dispersed, because you're just going to ask that same question one step further down. And no matter how many times you're told, well, yeah, that relation has relata, it's just that the relata are further relations, you're still going to have the same worry all the way down. Second problem. I'm going to say that this does look a pretty radical and revisionary view, but it seems to have insufficient motivation, so I think we've got to be slightly conservative in our theories. There may be some reasons to reject some standard picture that we have, but there doesn't seem anything to motivate something as radical as this. There are problems with particularist ontologies. There are problems with our notion of particular, problems with our notion of substance, but it doesn't really justify eliminating the notion completely. It really does seem to be throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So James's talk yesterday, you saw he went through about, did he identify something like five possible notions of a particular that we could have, various weakness, various weaknesses to each of them. Okay, so the notion of a particular may be a bit messy, it may still need some work from the philosophers, but do we really want to throw it out completely? And when I was sat here yesterday, I was also thinking, well, if, you know, if you've got all these different notions of particular and we're not sure which we're talking about, surely the situation's even worse if we're talking about structure. I mean, I feel I've got far less of a grip on what exactly we mean by structure. That's also a term that needs a lot of tidying up from the philosophers. Okay, here's a third objection. Second objection was insufficient motivation. Third objection is more like insufficiently radical. It seems to almost pull in the opposite direction there, because one thing they seem to be doing in this response is they're just putting the relations into the place in our ontology that particularity formerly occupied. So it isn't that radical a move after all. It's rather trying to get relations to do the same job that maybe substance used to do. So they call the book Everything Must Go, but the relations seem to now be the things, or at least that seems to be the claim in the quotation. So it still looks like a kind of thingy ontology. It's almost like they're just telling us to reconceptualize what we mean by thing. Okay, so I'm going to go on to talking quite some detail about concrete and abstract, but we want to cling to the concreteness, but it needn't just be the standard middle-sized particulars that we're accustomed to that concretize the structure. Okay, so we could be open for a more radical conceptual revision. And we note that Johanna Seitz been doing some very interesting work on alternative kind of ontologies, or there's this kind of ontology that Peter mentioned yesterday, the Whitehead kind of process theory. So it seems there could be many concrete entities that are not your standard particulars. Okay, so in that respect, ontic structural realism looks a bit maybe too conservative. Fourth problem. It seems that there could be better alternatives, which Lademan and Ross don't go on to consider. Okay, so mentioned the kind of process metaphysics in Whitehead. There's kind of monism. So Jonathan yesterday afternoon offered monism as the better alternative. Sebastian also very much likes that view. As you may know, I like a power structuralism, but the point of the alternatives being that there is something that concretizes the world, whether it be the processes, there is a single thing, or the powers. Because, problem five, and here's the real problem, it still seems that relations are abstractions rather than independent existence, which seems a lot more plausible than the opposite view. So ontic structural realism is trying to persuade us of a view where you can kind of build up the world from nothing but relations. Whereas it seems the opposite must be true. Because if relations are abstracta, a point which I'm going to go on to discuss, it's not as if you can just add more and more and more of them until you reach something that's concrete. You know, it's like adding more and more zeros so you get to the number one. it's not going to work. What you need is a world that contains some kind of independent existence, something that's able to exist on its own, which relations don't seem to be. Okay, so I'm now already moving on to the second objection, I think, which I'm going to spend a bit more time talking about. This is the collapse of the concrete and abstract. So it's a problem Van Frassen already noted in response to the earlier forms of ontic structural realism, saying if there's no non-structure, then there's no structure either. Structure has to be a structure of something. That seems to make sense. But I'm going to try to get to make a bit more progress in getting to the heart of this matter. Van Frassen's criticism predates the publication of Everything Must Go, so Lademan and Ross have an opportunity to reply to this. But their reply is along the lines of what they're talking about is modal structure. Okay, and they say they understand this as the relationships among phenomena that pertain to necessity, possibility, potentiality, and probability. So it's some of the structural relations that we may have thought of as causal relations or gnomic relations. So they're saying it's not just pure structure. What they want is that it's structure that has a modal force. And of course there are all sorts of modal implications in any structural holist position anyway, such as that you couldn't change one element without changing the identity of the structure as a whole. So there are those sort of complex modal relations that are going to be involved in a structural realism. However, the problem is, this is only distinguishing between two kinds of structure. So it's leaving all these sort of general worries that we had untouched. So yeah, it's a kind of relation. But our worry is a general one, that relations can't exist without relata. Just saying, yeah, but I'm only talking about a particular subset of relations. Well, you've still got to show that that subset of relations could exist without relata. If you're talking about modal relations such as gnomic or causal relations, then clearly the problem resurfaces. Could you have a causal relation just existing without relata? Could you have a gnomic, law-like relation existing without any things that it's relating? Well, it seems not. So, if it's leaving the general problem untouched, then what they really need to do, well, there's two ways to go, I think. So either you've got to give us a concrete bearer of the structure, or give us a damn good reason why the structure doesn't need a bearer. And we haven't been able to find one. Because, if we really get down to the heart of it, if we really do have a world of relations which seem to be abstracter, then we would have to admit that this was maybe a Platonist or maybe even Pythagorean metaphysics, where the world just is an abstract entity. Do they really want to say that? Well, maybe. It's maybe a possibility. So here's a response that sounds almost like they're willing to entertain the idea. Physical structure exists, but what is it? If it is just a description of the properties and relations of some underlying entities, this leads us back to epistemic structural realism. What makes the structure physical and not mathematical? Good question. But they say this is a question that we refuse to answer. In our view, there is nothing more to be said about this that doesn't amount to empty words and venture beyond what the principle of naturalistic closure allows. The world's structure just is and exists independently of us. And we represent it mathematically or physically via our theories. But Dipert seems even more willing to entertain a kind of Pythagorean view. I would maintain that the very possibility of a clear understanding of the world requires the possibility that it is, italic in original, it is a simple mathematical structure. And that creating complex ad hoc or hybrid structures, I think by that he means trying to add some concreteness into the structure, it says this constitutes negative progress. Okay. Well, please forgive me if you think I'm stating the bleeding obvious. Okay, so James isn't here today, and a lot of these arguments were directed towards James, and for all I know, everyone else in the room is already convinced, so please forgive me. But here's the way I see it, okay? Science and physics in particular, dealing with a representation of the world. And it's a largely mathematical representation, okay? But it is a representation. Now, so we've got to be careful mistaking the representation for the world itself. So we may model the world in arithmetical terms, but it doesn't mean that the world is a number, or the world is a function, or the world is an equation. Surely that's some mistake has occurred there. We must have confused the representation for the thing it represents. Okay. So there's that kind of general worry if you start to confuse the abstract with the concrete. But here's some more slightly philosophical arguments for why we should never be satisfied with any account that tells us that the world is purely abstract. The kind of arguments, but it's also just examples like intuition pumps, as Daniel Dennett calls them. Suppose God were trying to make the world according to an ontic structural realist recipe. Now, suppose God gets persuaded of ontic structural realism. So he's trying to make a world. But the problem here is, how would he be able to tell the difference between his plan for the world and the world itself? It seems that we think there is a distinction between the world qua God's plan and the world qua creation. Okay, so God just sort of thinks up this abstract structure, this whole. Well, if it is nothing more than abstract, then it exists when God thinks of it. Whereas I would take it that we find it more plausible that there is the abstract structure, but there's also concretization. And in the standard story, I'm no theologian, I'm sure you can tell, but in the standard story, God puts that plan into being in the act of creation. Second objection. They couldn't in principle be duplicate worlds if the world was nothing but pure abstract structure. Simply because it's only in concretization that a type token distinction can apply. So we find this, of course, back in Plato, that there is only one form of redness, because it's in this abstract realm. It's only once we find concretizations of the forms that we can distinguish between the type, and there's only one, and its tokens. So there's only one form of redness, but many different tokens of red in the concrete world. Now, I don't know how much weight you'd give to the consideration of duplicate worlds in any case, but it seems when we're speaking of concrete entities, we are happy to allow tokens of the same type. And if the world is pure abstraction, then it seems of necessity we can only allow that there's one instance. A third consideration, which is actually just a more detailed example of what's gone before, just to push the intuition that structures have to be concretized in something, the architect's plan does not a building make. Okay, so you need someone to concretize that plan. Similarly, a piece of music has structure, but to exist it has to be a structure of something. When you play the piece of music, you've got structured noise. Hope that doesn't sound too reductionist. Music is structured noise, or you could have the structure represented on a musical stave, but they're both concrete instantiations of that structure. So there's some simple examples, but we were thinking more about what exactly is going on, and we thought of a couple of other things that are relevant to this. Maybe relevant to it is Aristotle's distinction between form and matter. Maybe relevant to this is Frege on saturated terms. Sticking with the Aristotelian question, it seems it would be like Lademan and Ross saying that form is enough. Form doesn't need matter. Because we know there are a number of Aristotelian considerations to why that wouldn't be the case. Because form is... Oh well, please forgive me if this isn't completely accurate to any Aristotelian scholars. But form is a kind of being. And how can we have a kind of being without it being a kind of something? In which case, it seems that pure structure would be at best a potential world, it's not a world itself. So we can bring this line of objection together into the form of a dilemma for ontic structural realism. The dilemma is simply, is the theory intended in rem or anti rem? In rem, that means there has to be a concrete instantiator for it. So, that seems lacking in ontic structural realism. If anti-REM, our accusation is that the structure is a mere platonic entity. So we'd have to endorse some form of Platonism. I'll also describe it as Pythagoreanism. Of course, I don't mean the part of Pythagoras that's about transmigration of souls. I mean the idea that... reality is number. Numbers are the ultimate reality of things. Okay, there's a third line of objection, which... and I've been thinking about this overnight in context of the sort of power structuralism project as a whole. Because I think we're not really entitled to take the notion of structure and our knowledge of structure for granted. I think we've still got some work to do, and there are some challenges from philosophy of science that I think show that some of the issues that we need to address. So, one of the ideas of structural realism, as I said earlier, and certainly this is the way Stephen French used to articulate it, is this idea of preservation of structure through theory change. So here's a couple of problems there that I think can be quite general and we've all got to worry about. Well, first of all, that looks like an a posteriori claim, that if you look at the history of science, you will see, and Stephen French used to articulate this with examples, you will see that although some of the things change in the theory, some of the entities they appeal to, you can see that structurally it's the same. Well, that's an a posteriori claim, and some historians of science dispute it. I'm not a historian of science, I'm not going to go into the examples, but we've got to know that as a challenge to form structural realism. But here's something a bit more theoretical. So ontic structural realism is assuming that structure and content of a theory are easily divorced. Now, is that so obviously the case? So we know from some of the great names of 20th century philosophy of science, like Kuhn and Lakatos, that you know, we can challenge this idea that you can pick apart discrete portions of the theory and say that bit's false, that bit's true. No, instead they tell us a story where theories come in whole packages. Because if you believe the theory, you start to see the evidence for it, you start to see the laws and so on. And I think this is illustrated in the case of structure and the bearer. I mean, going back to the Aristotelian point, that the form seems to need some matter, and matter always has to come with a form. So it's as if they're trying to completely separate those two and claim that one survives and one doesn't. Well, that may work if they were so clearly separable, but if you think that there is some merit in the idea of theories coming in whole packages, then it seems it wouldn't be an easy task to do that. Third problem. And I don't know if this is unfair because it may just be a slip, but in one place they clearly overextend the theory. So this is where they say, in sum, we know that well-confirmed relations among phenomena must be retained in future theories. Well, how on earth could we know that? As I said with point one, it looks to be an a posteriori matter. And what would be the a priori argument that structure must always be retained in future theories? What's to stop somebody coming up with a radically new theory that changes more than just the ontological inventory, but also changes the structure as well? Which brings us to the fourth and final point on this. Is this naturalism abandoned? So, Lademan and Ross, at the start of their book, maybe you've all read it, they start with quite a strong attack on metaphysics as they think has been practiced in recent decades. And there's a call to naturalize metaphysics. By which they're mainly meaning that we have to make our theories, they have to take account of thinking, best thinking in science. So what we really ought to do, it surprises me that given that first chapter they then go on to this elaborate metaphysics that they think is naturalized. What surprises me is because what I thought from that is that it's a philosophy of quietism, really. If you really go for the naturalism, then I think the metaphysician is best just not to say anything, actually, just to give up their subject, because what do we really know? You know, what do we really know as philosophers? Some of us have got bachelor's level physics, but maybe that's about it. What we should really do is just leave it to the best physicists. They're the only ones in a position to tell us what there is. So we best say nothing, just go ask whoever the best physicist in the world is. I don't know, Stephen Hawking, Brian Cox, someone like that. Tell them, okay, you tell us what exists. Do you all know who Brian Cox is? Professor Brian Cox. The leading physicist of the age. If he hasn't reached America, you're lucky. Okay, but here's a more serious way in which it seems like naturalism abandoned. If you really are to go for the full naturalist program, then the structure and even the mathematics with which we articulate the structure is just going to be a part of our web of belief. So using Quine's image in his book about the way to understand naturalism, everything's just part of the web of belief, and in principle, it's open to revision. Now, we find it hard to conceive revising our logic and mathematics, but that's just because it's relatively near the centre of the web of belief. And we would always prefer to jettison some claim on the periphery if it means we can preserve what's in the heart of the web of belief. But it's just a matter of degree. So if you're going to say that the structure must be preserved through theory change, it seems to be abandoning the naturalistic program. And of course, if we can even revise the mathematics, then who are we to say that the structure is certainly going to be preserved in future theories? The naturalistic idea is leave everything up for grabs. And so James makes a big play at the start of the book. James and Don Ross, sort of saying how one problem with contemporary metaphysics is how you're just sort of clinging to your intuitions, and you're just going for the theories that sound plausible. And he's sort of saying, well, what the hell is this? How can we properly proceed on that basis? He says science is full of these counterintuitive results, and we've got to follow them wherever they take us. That's the true naturalistic spirit. Well, if that's the case, then clearly mathematics could go as well. I'm just going to take a slight detour into that. My take on this is, we really do, we haven't got much more at our disposal than our intuitions and what seems plausible to us. Contrary to James's claim, I think that even in physics, when we come up with some quite challenging result, we still try to go for the most plausible, intuitive, theoretical interpretation of it. But in science and in philosophy generally, it's not just pure intuitions. So at the start of the book, James mentions Plato in kind of mocking terms, that he's someone who's just sort of going on intuitions. But Plato wasn't quite doing that, was he? I mean, what I think was really heroic about Socrates is the way he was offering philosophy as an antidote to common sense. So you start with your untutored intuitions, but then you examine them, you challenge them. You see how they match with other things, and in most of the Platonic dialogues, the initial intuition with which we begin gets overthrown, but it's ultimately overthrown in terms of other things that are intuitive. Now, what's going on there? I don't see science and philosophy as really having different methodology at all. Okay, final section. Just something on abstraction. And I don't know if it's presumptuous of us to say that the following ought to be uncontroversial. Maybe that's a dangerous thing to say in philosophy, where everything can be controversial. But it's just something on what's going on when we abstract a structure out of a concrete reality. What seems to be going on there is we're abstracting the salient points from reality for purposes of a simple and systematic theory. So this could be abstracting the structure, maybe even, depending on the metaphysics of relations, maybe the relation itself is an abstraction from some concrete state of affairs. And this abstraction may result in something we can mathematize, we can put into a model. But first of all, as I said earlier, we shouldn't mistake this mathematization for the reality itself, which would seem to be an instance of what Whitehead calls the fallacy of misplaced concreteness. So I'm going to say yes, concrete reality certainly has structure, but if it has structure, then it isn't only structure, because structure always has to be structure of something. There is some other thing. And here we seem to be following Lewis, who says, abstract entities are abstraction from concrete entities. They result from somehow subtracting specificity, so that an incomplete description of the original concrete entity would be a complete description of the abstraction. So we're ignoring some of the features of reality. Okay, so the abstraction is, it's reality minus some other parts that are not relevant to your theory. So the parts that don't interest you. But you mustn't just assume that those other parts don't exist, not real, unimportant. They could indeed be real, but We've just abstracted them away. So that's the sort of thing we would say was going on in a form of structural realism, that the structure could indeed be there, but it's reality minus some of the other parts, namely the parts that are the concrete bearers of that reality. So, some concluding thoughts. First of all, the fact that we have difficulties in finding the right criteria for individuation for some entities shouldn't lead us to replace them with nothing but structure. Because, we say, this is going to empty the world of all concreteness. And, okay, some people may go that way. We haven't really offered an major argument against it, but it would mean you'd have to be accepting an ontology where we have a Platonic world of anti-REM universals, and I don't think that's our world. But finally, just to make good on all these caveats I've been making earlier that don't want to come across as an enemy of structuralism or structural realism, want to allow that there are other alternatives, other holistic ontologies that do justice to the interdependent character of the world, but while still offering some concretization for that interdependent structure, such as monism, process metaphysics, my personal favourite is dispositionalism, and the point of these views is that there's a concrete bearer to the structure, rather than having just relations floating freely. And so, for those reasons, the question in the title, relations all the way down, question mark, simple answer, which I could have said more briefly, is no. Thank you.
Thank you.